Blog Talk Radio.
From the world we see to the unseen world we see sometimes that makes us stand in awe of God's universe, this is Betsy Belega welcoming you from Cape Washington in the south to Nunavut and the Northern Lights in the Arctic Circle, from the White House gates to Lion's Gate, from everybody listening around God's globe. Hi, Gigi. This is Tuning In with Betsy from marvelous Manhattan, terrific Toronto, and charming Colorado. Today, my very special guest is Dr. James Hubbard. Whether it's severe thunderstorms, hail, tornadoes, or a hurricane, summer weather can be devastating and deadly. Dr. James Hubbard is also known as the survival doctor. He'll share tips today to prepare for severe weather. He is the author of two books, The Survival Doctor's Guide to Wounds and The Survival Doctor's Guide to Burns. You can find him at his website at www.thesurvivaldoctor.com. You can also find him on Facebook. And I'm not sure if he's on YouTube. Dr. Hubbard, are you on YouTube?
I sure am. I've got some pretty neat videos on YouTube. Yeah.
And what's your channel over there?
I think it's the survival doctor.
Well, that makes common sense, which isn't too common. So, and again, with severe weather, sometimes we think, oh, man, I'm prepared, and we forget common sense.
We sure do. And we're so spoiled these days. We think that if something happens, and, you know, I'm mostly geared toward medical problems, and so we go and if something happens, we call 911 or whatever the same is in Canada, and they're there in a few minutes. And if they're not, we don't hear the sirens by the time we get off the phone. Where are they? That sort of thing. Well, they're not always going to be there in certain situations, in storms and in certain disasters, etc. They may take a little while to get there. So you really ought to know some things that probably a lot of people have kind of taken for granted.
Well, what are the basics that we should have on hand in case of an emergency that pops up? And I don't mean that they'll say, oh, a pop-up event or a pop-up restaurant or a pop-up sale, but I'm not joking around. What are the basics that we should all have on hand?
Well, first let me say that at my website, if you sign up for my newsletter, I have those basics that I recommend there. But in general, you should have something for, you know, a dressing, a bandage, some antibiotic ointment. One of the things, though, that you might not think about is having something like your medication. Think about what you use as far as over-the-counter medications more than any other of those medications, or herbs or whatever, and have some of those in your little bag or on your shelf in an area where you can find it easily. I like to at least have a little bit of a go-to or a bug-out bag where that you can have some of those things just in case you need to leave right away. You'll have some of those stuff handy. Have a little bit of your prescription medications if you take any. Have a few days of that. You can save those up over time. You can get them filled a little early, and usually it won't cost you any more, but check with a pharmacy and make sure. And have those available. Have a light, and batteries. Be sure you have the batteries there. Have some sort of portable radio. I like the radios that you can crank, and just in case the batteries go bad. Back to medical things, though. You know, just have some Band-Aids, a little bit of some sort of wrap, like elastic wrap. Tape. You can do so much with duct tape. I actually have a book called Duct Tape 911, The Amazing Things You Can Do to Tape Yourself Together.
Where can we get this book?
You can get it on my website if you look under books.
Because lately, this is strange but true, I watch a lot. I have insomnia, so that's okay. But at least I'll see the storms coming. But I heard recently somebody saying about, I think it's Yellowstone and the volcanoes, if they ever go off, you should have duct tape and tape your windows, because I didn't know this, that if you inhale the lava, the the Magnum, that it feels like shards of glass going through your lungs. Well, I didn't know that. I didn't learn that in school. But I'm thinking now in Canada, duct tape. And I had it, but I'm going out for more of it.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
Well, the thing is that you should have basic things around, but if you don't have medical supplies, you can usually make do. You can use something to make a dressing, something that's absorbent and clean, and then you can put some tape on top of it. You have a dressing. If you can't get to the doctor right away and you have a bad cut or something, put pressure on it to stop that bleeding and clean it out. But if you want to repair it, put it back together, then you can use actually duct tape to make little strips of tape and put it back together that way. The things around the house that you have, some household bleach that you can dilute a little bit and make you some actual drinkable water, or if you're worried about water supply, or some sort of a thing to wash your wounds and that sort of thing.
Well, living out in Colorado, I'm sure you spent a lot of time in the great outdoors. What's the most common summertime outdoor injury that you see in children or adults, the most common?
Well, the most common is some sort of sprained ankle or broken ankle or something like that, or a wrist or some sort of joint. And the thing about something like that is the main thing you should do is just not move that particular area. And if you can, stay off the ankle or whatever is broken and just splint it so that it doesn't move. Because the more it moves, the more likely it is that you're going to injure more tissue in there. And you just don't want to try to put that to straighten it out or anything. Not unless you absolutely have to, because you're probably going to do more harm than good. I've had people that are going out on long hikes, and they have a sprain. And boy, if they have to come back and they have to walk on that sprain, they have a really sore, swollen, damaged ankle. So, if that were to happen to me, and I could walk out, I guess I would probably try to make me some sort of a cane or some sort of a semi-crutch and kind of slowly make it out. And then, of course, you could always call for help if you can't move at all. Poison ivy, always a big thing for everybody.
Oh, I was going to get to that because one of my questions down my list here was that as a kid, I never had poison ivy. But when I was in my 20s, I don't know where I got, but I didn't discover it. Poison ivy discovered me. I have no idea how I got it. But what's the best solution to a bad case of poison ivy?
Well, first, in any allergy, including poison ivy, you may brag that you're not allergic to it. But all allergies, you're never allergic to the first time you're exposed to things. It's always the second, third, fourth, maybe 20th time. So don't assume that you... can roll in it without any problems, and you may regret it. First thing is, if you can get that oil off, if you can wash off with soap and water in about the first 10-15 minutes, you have a good chance of not getting it really breaking out bad with the poison ivy. So that's one thing. Try to do that. If you know your weeds, jewel weed is a great is something that grows close to poison ivy. If you were to get in poison ivy and you knew what jewel weed looks like, you could crush some up, wash your whatever area it is that you were exposed to, and again, a lot of times you won't break out. Once you break out, boy, there's nothing that cures it right away, or it's just be a long term process of itching and rash. And so some of the things you can do, quercetin is a little natural medication you can use. Either take a couple of drops or put it on the skin. That can be an anti-inflammatory for it. Of course, you can get the over-the-counter steroids, that sort of thing, to put on it. One of the things that people don't know, if you have a really bad case and you're just itching like crazy, you can get in the shower and put the water on. Obviously, don't burn yourself, but get it on really hot, to the point where you know it's you can still stand it. Keep it on and that and for a few minutes, and it depletes the histamines in your skin for a little bit. So actually, that really warm, almost hot water will deplete those histamines, and it will help the itching for a little bit of time.
Well,
in fact, it'll make it go away for a little bit of time.
I didn't know that, but thank you. Recently, now I'm going to go in another direction. I saw on one of the TV shows, I think it was Inside Edition, after the news, there was a case of two little boys who were outside for hours this week at their daycare, and they were unprotected, they were shirtless, and they suffered second and third degree burns. And when the daycare center was approached, their excuse was that they had run out of sunscreen. So I'll say, what type, because I hear all different sorts of things about sunscreen. Does it really help? What's the best for kids? What about adults? I used to think, like, I thought years ago, going back like maybe 5 years ago, I thought if I had a 15 or a 20 SPF that it was good. Now they're saying that's too low. What about sunscreen?
Well, the sunscreen, you know, that is better than nothing as far as you're concerned. 30 is a good cutoff point. Above that, and you get a little bit, it really doesn't help that much more. One of the things about sunscreen is you have to put it on fairly frequently. You have to put it on every few hours because you sweat it off, rub it off, that sort of thing. The other thing about sunscreen that some people say, well, it doesn't help. One of the problems with that, we know that you know, you have increased risk of some skin problems with too excessive sun. People that have sunscreen on, they say, okay, well, I've got it on, I can stay out as long as I want to now. So instead of staying out for 15 minutes, they stay out for 30 minutes or an hour. So the sunscreen is never going to completely block, unless you, you know, smear on something really, really big time and thick. It's really not going to block all the sun off. So with time, you're going to get some sun damage. So you don't just assume that the sunscreen is going to work that well. But the other thing is, wear some clothes. These kids, if they'd had a shirt on, that would have probably prevented a lot of the problems. If you don't like the sunscreen or just as extra protection, use some sort of loose cotton shirt. You know, remember your legs if you're and wear long pants, and you know, if you want to protect yourself there, can always remember a hat, protect your face and your neck. So a wide brim type hat is a great thing. Don't forget your eyes. Your eyes are sensitive to the sun too, and if you are exposed to it too long over a period of time, with age, you're going to be prone to cataracts and macular degeneration and things like that more than other people. So get you some good sunglasses that have that UVB and UVA guaranteed blockage of maybe 99% or so.
What? Now you just made me think of something I saw recently. Can we actually sunburn our eyes?
Yeah, I guess you could. Theoretically, you could sunburn. You can certainly burn your eyes in different ways, and welders do that quite a bit. It'd be unusual to permanently damage, I think, your eyes from sunburn. The thing, though, is those UV rays, they damage your eyes over time, just like they damage your skin, and they put you at increased risk for problems down the road more than anything.
Well, I'm going to ask about another itchy illness. What about hives? Is that a psychological illness that's triggered by stress or worry?
Well, sometimes, but certainly not all the time. Hives can be a very dangerous, serious problem, depending on what's causing it. You break out, and hives are these big splotchy type bumps, raised bumps that usually itch, and they're scattered over your body. Some people with stress break out with hives. You're correct. Some people, though, if you have an allergic reaction, it is telling you that it's a pretty serious allergic reaction, and you probably need to get to a doctor or take some medication at least for it. And that's for people that might have some allergy to a food or to bees or something like that. So that can be the serious side of it. So if you break out in hives and you're not sure, best thing to do is maybe take you some an antihistamine and check with a doctor or healthcare professional and find out why you're doing that. If people break out, you know, hives with stress, you try to treat the stress as best you can. And again, things like the antihistamines might be able to help, either the Benadryls and those types of things, which are sedating, or the newer ones that are not quite so sedating, and you could try either one.
Well, Alex Trebek, my favorite TV show host, has a summer cold. He sounds terrible. No offense, Alex. But he mentioned how difficult it is the other day to get rid of a summer cold. What's the best advice you can have for a summer cold? And I'll just say, now I read this years ago, that it's the cold is 3 days coming, 3 days with me, and then it takes 3 days for me to get rid of it. What would you tell Alex or anybody listening today?
If you have a true cold from a virus, there is not a cure for it. Your best bet is to rest and to good balanced diet and just give it time. I have on my website several types of herbs and other medications that have been shown to either prevent colds, slightly prevent colds, or to decrease the amount of time you have them. Right offhand, I can't remember. I'd hate to give the wrong ones for sure, because it's kind of blanking out on that, but there are some on there. The main thing, though, is keep your immune system up. Colds are viruses. Your immune system fights them off. You have to depend on your immune system to do that. So the best to keep as healthy as you can makes it better and gives you a better chance of getting well quicker. Now, there are allergies that cause hoarseness and sneezing and cough and all that, and those are allergies to a pollen or something. Those are not colds. They're not viruses. They're treated differently, and sometimes it may be hard to tell the difference. Usually with a cold, you're going to have, you know, a little fever, a little aching, that sort of thing. Maybe a sore throat with allergies, just more of the sneezing, and it, with either one, you can have the hoarseness. So know what you're dealing with, and then you'll know better what to do for treating it.
Well, people love to go on cruises, but in the last couple of years, we're seeing so many news stories about people getting sick, but food poisoning on cruise ships. What would be your advice? I mean, that's something I think I experienced twice in my life. What can you tell us about remedies for food poisoning?
I think the best remedy for a lot of things, if you're out in public. First, if you're out in public, cruise or whatever, you're at airport, boy, there's just no telling what you're exposed to. Hopefully, you're keeping your immune system up with, you know, good balanced diet and exercise, etc. The other thing that's really important is to wash your hands, and not just a little rinse under water, but really wash them for about 15 to 30 seconds or something like that. There's singing the happy birthday song. Wouldn't do it out loud too much in public, but singing the happy birthday song once or twice while you're scrubbing your hands with soap and water. That's typically how much you need to really get off those viruses and things that are going to lead to problems. And on a cruise ship, with the food and with the people, sometimes it's just going to go around. And the usual one that goes around is that Norwalk virus. That's not just for cruise ships. It's just that those people are together so much that one or two or three people get it, and then pretty soon everybody's got it because it's so contagious. But, you know, people get it all the time. It's the diarrhea problem. The stomach virus is the typical one. When you get it, the only thing is, again, it's a virus. You're not going to be able to treat it with antibiotics if it is that particular virus, and a lot of other types of infectious gastrointestinal infections. You're just going to have to try to stay hydrated with water. Or some sort of liquid, you can put a little salt in it. There, again, on my website, I have a little thing where you can make some ingredients called oral hydrating solutions that kind of give you a better better chance of staying hydrated up. But that's going to be the main thing, is drink those fluids and not get dehydrated. You know, in other countries, in undeveloped or poorly developed countries, diarrhea in children is one of the number one causes of death. And so some organizations have put together some of those solutions. And they say if these kids do that and they stay hydrated up and they give themselves some time, there can be quite a bit of a decrease in the amount of deaths from those. And so the same thing goes with somebody on a ship. Stay hydrated up.
Well, when you were saying about washing hands, in Toronto, this is strange but true, I've noticed many of our restaurants here, they've renovated. And when you go in the washroom, you don't touch, you just put your hands under the water and you can get the soap and wash. And then they've gotten rid of paper towels, and you dry your hands with the blow dryers. Now, I've heard pros and cons. Do the blow dryers actually, are they effective, or do they spread more germs? Or?
Yeah, I've heard pros and cons, too, on that, and I don't know that there is a perfect answer for that. My answer would be, if they're not paper towels there, yes, use it. The newer ones are more high-powered, and they and so your hands get a little drier faster. Is there a chance that germs might be spreading in the air during that time? Yes, I think probably so. But there's also a good risk that if you wash your hands, and then that's part of the process. But the other process to get rid of the germs on your hands is to dry them well. Now, one of the things about those dryers is that most people just stick their hands under there and kind of get them semi-dry and leave. That doesn't work nearly as well as getting your hands completely dry. So if you're going to use it, use it and try to get those hands dry. If you're worried about it, bring yourself some hand wipes or something like that.
Well, something else you mentioned about inflammation, and now I'll watch shows and stuff on TV, and they'll say inflammation. It's heart attacks, this and that. So many illnesses are called, oh, it's inflammation. It's inflammation. How can I stop being so inflamed? What's a diet? Or many of my girlfriends who have very high-powered jobs in corporate America, they get like 700 emails a day, and they're just wiped out at night, and they say, oh, I'm so stressed. And then I had heard that stress causes inflammation. What can we do to de-stress and not have so much inflammation in our body?
Well, that's true. Inflammation is one of those things that is definitely a problem when you have too much of it. Now, the body uses inflammation to, like, heal wounds, that sort of thing. So it's good in certain processes in the body. But most of us think that, yes, inflammation causes a lot of problems and diseases and that sort of thing, too much of it. Stress, well, you, easier said than done, but you try to get rid of some of that stress. How do you do that? Well, if you can't change your job, at least try to get a little exercise. Maybe get you in some yoga or something like that, or some sort of a meditation or quiet time and prayer, something like that, where that you're actually giving yourself a little time to rest. Try to make sure that you have some sleep, get ready for bed. Don't be working up till straight up bedtime and then work in the bed, but give yourself a little time to relax. And like I said, the exercise is really good. Diet, there are people out there who claim that diets can decrease inflammation, and I think so. I'm not sure there's an exact perfect way of a diet, but there are anti-inflammatory diets out there. I know Dr. Will, I think it's Dr. Will.
Oh, diet. Yes. I know who you mean.
Yeah, he has an anti-inflammatory diet. And basically it's a lot of fruit and vegetables, which is good for you no matter what. A little less meat, a little less fried foods. Fish, that's a good anti-inflammatory. Fish oil, if you can't get the fish, or both. So just fruit, vegetables, a variety of them, and some fish or fish oil.
I know what I'm going to ask. What about our crazy love affair with sugar in America and in North America and Canada too? That I never had pop. We call it Papa Pierce soda. Growing, I had it once a year at Christmas. That's the only time I ever had soda. And how can we break our sugar addiction? I won't even call it. I didn't know the word, but it is a sugar addiction.
Well, first, wean yourself off sodas, and the sugary drinks. And not only that, but try to limit the drinks that are calorie free, because they have their own. They have their own problems. So try to get onto something a little more natural, and including water, maybe some juices, something like that, that don't have so much sugar in them. So that's the first step. And like you said, sugar, boy, it's good, and everybody likes it. And I don't know that you can say, okay, well, and some people are going to say, oh, this is wrong, but I think, that most sugars, you say, okay, this is a good type of sugar, this is bad. I think most of them, in general, too much of them are bad for you, even to the point of honey, et cetera, et cetera. And which honey is a whole new subject.
Now, what's wrong with honey? Because
it's a sugar.
Really? Because I went vegan last summer, and boy, that was a switch in my diet. But anyway, this is my snack. Instead of potato chips and soda, I got a banana, organic peanut butter, and then I dabbed it with honey. So then I'm reading that vegans don't eat honey. And it's like, besides, then I thought eating strawberries, blueberries, the natural fructose in fruits, then I'm reading that's not too much of that isn't good. And I just get to like, I don't know what to eat anymore.
I know it. And then you give up. The problem is you never are perfect on this stuff, and then you give up. So you do what you can do. Certainly fruits, the grapes, et cetera, they have sugar in them, and you don't want to eat those totally. But, compared to the other things out there, I think they're a really good snack. The same goes with honey. I'm not against honey by any means. I think it's great, and a little bit of what you were doing sounds like a really, really good snack. I'm just saying that it's just like almost everything else, too much of it is not good for you. Certainly honey is great in so many ways. In fact, honey is a great, it has anti-inflammatory qualities. It can be used for cough. It's been shown to do that. And it can also, for the survival factor, it can be placed on wounds or infections, skin infections, and it actually works really well as an antibiotic or an antibacterial for those. Now, the only thing about honey is when you're using it for the skin, make sure it is the raw honey or the Medi honey or something like that. But also make sure that your child, when you're old and under, does not eat the honey. There can be a few little bacterial spores in there that have never shown any problems in adults, but they have been fatal in children who eat too much honey.
Well, now I'm going to ask you, what inspired you to write your books? And talk to us about your books.
Well, I was I'm a family doctor. Started out in my little small town in Mississippi. Grew up there. I learned a lot when I was back there. Back in the 80s, we didn't have access, the people out in the country at least, didn't have access to the ambulance right away. And they did what they had to do to survive. And a lot of things, they showed me how you don't have to have just modern medicine, modern equipment to get by. I never say don't use your regular doctors if they're available. I'm talking about times when there's no one available. They also had several things out there that they were trying that, just didn't make sense that really probably they were harming themselves more than they than helping. And so I wanted, I thought, you know, they need some more information about this. I've tried writing pamphlets and things, and that works pretty well. You just don't have time in the office all the time to tell them all these things. And even if you do, they're nervous and they don't remember what you're saying a lot of times. So with time and over the years, and now that I'm semi-retired in my practice, I decided I would start putting out some books and websites describing some of these things and showing people that, yeah, you can survive in a lot of cases when you don't have expert help around, when it's impossible, or for those few minutes before it arrives, when sometimes it's so important to what you do can make such a difference. So I started writing these books. Wounds was a good start, and burns, because they're fairly common and there's some specific things. And so I wrote a couple of e-books on those, and they have on my e-books, you can say you have what to do for a bad wound or whatever, or if your wound's bleeding a lot, then you can link to a part on that, kind of go from link to link on that, and it also has some videos. From there, I put out a book called Living Ready Pocket Manual First Aid. It was a published book by a publisher, and it's more just a no-frills book about some of the things that you might encounter as far as emergencies and then what to do after the emergency for a little while until somebody can with an expert help can help you, or at certain times when you're just not going to get any expert help at all. Next year it's going to be even a bigger book that I'm putting out for that. Meantime, I did put out the Duct Tape 911, which I thought was it's kind of a fun book. It's illustrated, and it gives some surprising things you can do with duct tape, I think. And I hope that it gives people food for thought on what other supply can I use for medical problems.
It's amazing. I had taken a spill in May, and when I was falling, I was going down forwards. So I lifted my head so I wouldn't get a head injury, and I put my hands out. So I wasn't too bad, but my right hand, I know I sprained it. And my fourth finger, my ring finger, it was extremely painful. And so what I did, I came upstairs. And this sounds stupid, but it worked. I didn't have duct tape. I see Betsy Belega, you should have duct tape. I took Scotch tape, and I wrapped the fourth finger, well, my second finger, your thumb, your index finger, your middle finger, and I taped those two fingers together. And I kept it wrapped, and it healed itself. And I do think sometimes, I don't mean like a car accident, but sometimes the body does know how to heal itself, because if I'm slicing onions or something in the kitchen and I accidentally slice my index finger, I just, you know, I saliva and, run the water, put a Band-Aid on it. I don't have to tell my body, you have to reconnect. My skin automatically reconnects, and I'm so grateful for that. But, yeah, it's amazing that I'm fine now. But that taught me a lesson. Watch where you're walking and lift up your feet.
Well, a lot of time, your body is amazing, yes. And so you're absolutely right. Constantly it's protecting us and changing things. And certainly a lot of things the medical profession does is just put the make it where the body can work its wonders a little better. I mean, putting a suturing a cut, we're just putting the edges closer together so that the body can mend it back from something like you were saying the finger. Certainly, if you would have gone to the doctor and the doctor would have looked at it and maybe even X-rayed it, everything would have been okay. That's exactly what the doctor would have done. A little fancier stuff, a little more expensive, that sort of thing, but still, he'd tape those two fingers together. That would certainly be what I would do in a sprained finger. And as far as duct tape versus other tapes, duct tape's not magic. It's just what people have around a lot of times. It's good and sticky. It's waterproof. But bad side of it would be some people might have a skin reaction to the glue that's used in duct tape. You got to be careful with that. You got to, you know, it's nice to try a little bit somewhere on you and make sure you're not going to have one of those bad reactions beforehand, but any tape or anything like that would have done.
No, you've triggered my memory cells here. Way back in the 80s, it might have been 1980, my sister had surgery back in Pennsylvania. And at that time, it was a new procedure. They didn't stitch you up, they stapled you. So what's happened? Do we still staple people? I'm not going to staple myself, or I don't need a stapled stomach or anything like that. But has that sort of gone the way of the dodo bird? No,
not at all. No, not at all. The point of putting, you know, again, whatever you do on a cut is put the tissue together so that, again, the body has a better chance of mending itself. And also, hopefully, pretty soon that the skin will seal over and keep the bacteria out. So I would say that if somebody were to... There are classes and people that teach how to suture, regular people how to suture. That's fine, but it takes a little bit of effort. It takes a little bit of practice. You got to have the right materials. Secondly, would be there are things called skin staples. You can buy them. They're about, I don't know, $10-$15, and they're just a little thing where you put the skin together so that the edges are together, and then you just press it and it staples. I don't know the difference between it and just regular stapling, other than it is sterile, and that's a big deal as opposed to just regular staples. If you ever do that, I would say that also be sure you have a staple remover, because when those staples go in, those points kind of point inward, so that if you were just to pull it out with something, you would pull out some skin too, whereas these little staple removers, they work in a way where they straighten those little ends out and you don't tear tissue. But yes, stapling is used in surgery quite a bit. So it is the difference with suture. You can fine tune it a little more. Sometimes there can be less of a scar. The staples only work for, you know, pretty shallow wounds on the skin. You're going to still have to, if it was really deep into the muscle, you'd have to suture inside the muscle and then staple the skin. But, yes, they're used all the time.
Well, I'll tell you, you triggered my memory again. We were talking about the winter, and when we had that ice storm, I slipped, and I went, again, face first. So, anyway, no brain injury, thank God, no concussions. But my left palm, boy, did the skin come off. So I went to the drugstore, and I had the Polysporin and all that. And then I saw this something called New Skin, NU-SKIN. So I don't know what I paid. Maybe I'd have paid, I don't know, $7 or $8 for it. And you bring it home, you clean your hand, and my hand was very, very painful. Mm. And I sprayed this on, and it protects your skin until the skin grew back. And it amazed me. It actually worked.
Yeah, well, it just
I
sealed off.
It.
Yeah, the first thing about a cut, make sure that you stop the bleeding. I had so many people that come into the office, very intelligent people, and their cut is bleeding, and they're kind of in a panic brain mode where they're not thinking right. And all they need to do was put pressure on it for, you know, 5 minutes, and it's going to stop bleeding. Most cuts will do that with just direct pressure. So you'd put the direct pressure on, you stop the bleeding. Second thing, if you're not going to be able to get medical help right away, is make sure that it's good and clean. Because if you were to put that new skin on, or you were to suture or whatever, and there's a lot of bacteria still in there, well, they're just going to love that, because they're going to grow and divide, and nothing's going to keep them away. They have a warm, moist environment there. make sure that you're really good and clean on your hand, and your hand with it scraped. You know, if there's anything in there, any debris, it's going to really hurt to try to get all that out. But you're going to have to do that with washing or a little pressure type washing, which is spray a little clean water in there or put it under a tap and clean it off really well. And then, yes, you can seal it with new skin or suture
well,
or whatever.
I'd spray me before it suture me because I don't think I'm not Betsy Ross. I don't think I'm much of a seamstress. But,
yeah.
Doctor, it's our time is up. I want you to give out your website again, and I'll let you wrap it up.
Okay, it's the Survival Doctor, all spelled out, THESURVIVAL, Doctor, DOCTOR.com. And you'll find all sorts of information there. You just you can search or go to some of the tabs at the top, and you'll find just about much, much medical information, more than probably you can imagine at this point or that you would suspect. And then if you have a comment, I try to respond to comments. I never respond specifically to try to treat or diagnose a person in that way. So everything is more general, and I never say stay away from your doctor or your healthcare provider if there's the chance to have that, that this is not what this is for. This is for general information and to provide you with something, some tools to use if you cannot get expert help.
Thank you. And thank you for all you've done over the years in the medical field. So I'll say thank you for listening to Tuning In with Betsy. Have a marvelous day. Thank you.
Thank you.